Hello, and welcome to another episode of MotoGP OD, the internet radio show about motorcycle road racing. Today is Friday, January 20th, 2006. This is show number 39. I'm Bob Hayes. Thanks for tuning in. Well, you know how sometimes stuff just won't click, and nothing seems to work right, and you just have a bad week? That's how my past week went with the phone interview with Max McAllister from Traction Dynamics. It was just one thing after another between the both of us, and it all just kind of conspired to prevent that phone call from ever happening. So I hope that we're going to be able to take care of that here in the next couple of days, and we will have that segment on next week's show. At least that's the plan. But for this week, I'm going to be substituting in the next step up the motorcycle, the frame, for our tech segment. So we'll have, hopefully next week, we'll have part two of our suspension. Lots more to a frame than you might actually kind of think initially, and I'm going to be talking about that a little bit. We've also got a couple of new news items that happened this past week. And before all that, there's a couple of things I wanted to mention. First of all, a big thank you to all the people that took the time to do the survey on the MotoGPOD website. The link is on the MotoGPOD website, but the survey is actually somewhere else. But you know what I mean. It's not that big a deal. So thank you very much for doing that. And if you haven't yet taken the survey, please do. You know, if you get a chance, it's pretty quick. It's totally anonymous, fairly generic. Just a little survey. And then MotoGPOD listener Chris Ashmore was nice enough to send a few pictures he took when he got to go to the Cycle World International Motorcycle Show, which looked like good fun. Posted those on the MotoGPOD.com website. Take a look at those. There's one of Kenny Roberts' championship-winning two-stroke and several of Valentino Rossi's YZR M1 in the way cool yellow and black livery that they used at Laguna Seca. It's cool stuff. Good pictures. So thanks very much to Chris for that. Next, you may remember that I've talked about the American Road Racer 2006 calendar, you know, more than once. Well, I talked to Mark Sorensen this past week, and he tells me that for every calendar sold in January, he's going to be donating $5 to the Road Racing World Action Fund. Now, the Road Racing World Action Fund helps pay for air fencing at motorcycle racing circuits all over America to cover up the nasty walls and Armco and make them so much safer. So it's a really, really great cause. And it's a really cool calendar. And on top of all that, he's knocked the price down to $12.99. So we basically are getting January for free. So stop by AmericanRoadRacer.com and order one up. You will be happy that you did. And last, but certainly not least, a friend of mine has rented out one of those trophy suites at Laguna Seca for the USGP. And he's got, quite a few seats left in it. A few people that sort of initially thought they'd be going kind of can't. So Steve has all of these tickets. Now, these are not the cheap seats. This is a full-on suite in the pit lane side of the track. It's a very, very cool thing. You can check it out at stevejones.cc/suite. And that's suite as in suite of rooms, not, you know, suite. So, but of course, I'm going to put a link in that on the website. Whatever, take a look. stevejones.cc/suite. Take a look, and if it's something that you'd like to do, let Steve know. I think he's putting some of these tickets and things on eBay, but, you know, if you tell him that MotoGPOD sent you, he'll set you up a special, you know, buy it now feature, which, you know, just for you, and you're not going to be bidding with somebody that's going to drive up the price or anything like that. It's a really cool thing, and it might be a very fun way to see the U.S. Grand Prix here in July. All right, enough with all this preamble stuff. Let's get on with the rest of the show. All righty, here's a few news tidbits that I found on the web, things that have been happening in MotoGP this past week. It's still, you know, it's silly season. Things are gearing up, though. We do have the Sepang test starting next week. At least that'll be something where they're actually riding the motorcycles. That'll be kind of interesting to talk about. But this week, Honda has finalized their motorcycle racing plans for 2006. And that plan now officially includes Team KR, with Kenny Roberts Jr. listed as the rider. Team KR is going to be getting their engines from Honda, but the chassis will still be all Team Roberts. Earlier hopes that Team KR might be fielding two machines ridden by Kenny Roberts Jr. and his brother Curtis Roberts have apparently not worked out, because only one rider is listed on there. And that rider is number 10, Kenny Roberts Jr., who you'll remember was riding a Suzuki last year, but Suzuki chose not to renew his contract, instead replacing him with Christopher Mühlen. So, you know, good for Kenny. He's going to be on the grid. It will be interesting to see how the KR machine, which has, you know, been touted as a very forward-looking design, a very well-made machine, you know, lots of interesting stuff. And let's see how that machine can perform with the Honda V5 engine, you know, a proven engine that's got a lot of power and everything. But I'm not going to count on them being in the front of the grid all of a sudden. I'm really, really glad they got their engine supply problem worked out. And I'm sure that they're going to be able to count on that supply for the entire season, although they probably thought they were going to be able to count on that last year with the deal that they had with KTM. But I think that Honda is kind of a different company than KTM, although, you know, I would never have suspected that KTM would do business that way. And apparently Kenny Roberts didn't either. And I would think that Kenny Roberts Sr. has learned his lesson, and he's got some seriously ironclad contracts signed for this whole deal. And then over at the Konica Minolta team, Konica Minolta Honda, that is, things are going to stay the same as they were last year with the team fielding the one motorcycle ridden by Makoto Tomita. And my prediction that Lucio Cecinello's team LCR might add the second bike doesn't look like it's going to be happening, as the Honda release lists only the one that will be Casey Stoner's machine. Interestingly, on that release, the team is called just simply Honda LCR. No mention of Carrera anywhere in there. So, does that tell us that Carrera Sunglasses is not going to be sponsoring Honda LCR? May very well be true. We'll have to find out. They were the title sponsor of Casey Stoner's bike when, you know, Casey was riding the 250 series. So, it's, you know, I had kind of assumed that they would come along for the ride to MotoGP, but, you know, who knows? Maybe they didn't want to step up to the plate. Maybe there was too many conflicts with their existing sponsorship deals. I know that, like, Caparossi has a Carrera sponsorship deal. I think Nicky Hayden wears, or no, he wears Oakley's. All that sort of thing. You know, this money, and there's so many contracts around that you just never know. They may not be able to, or they may not want to. And then this week's award for surprising rumor out of left field goes to Crash.net, an excellent website. Check out Crash.net. Crash.net reported on Monday that WCM, the team that you see at the back of the MotoGP grid, might tie in with, get this, none other than Bimota, the manufacturer of, among other bikes, the Tezzi that I talked about last week in the suspension tech segment with its hub center steering, or Tezzi, I believe it's called Tezzi. And a few months ago, WCM looked to be working with KTM to use those very same engines that KTM screwed Team KR out of last season that we just talked about. But I think that maybe team boss Peter Clifford has come to his senses and decided not to work with KTM. I mean, it's not like the engine was all that to begin with. And then if they're going to pull out on you halfway through the season, leave you high and dry, that's not something that you want to get involved with. And last year, WCM had hoped that the Blatta V6 would debut, but, you know, delay after delay after delay, and finally just basically giving up, caused the team to, you know, having to continue to using their own 2004 four-cylinder engine. So WCM is definitely looking for something for next year, because that Blatta engine's not going to be happening, especially with the 800cc engine rule coming out in 2007. And that 2004 four-cylinder is hideously uncompetitive. But, you know, the strange thing is about Bimota typically uses other manufacturers' engines in their motorcycles. And they haven't been involved with racing since 2000, when the Suzuki-powered Bimota was to have been ridden by Anthony Gobert until that deal fell through for funding problems. So it's a little bit weird. You know, who knows? WCM might just have their name on the, Bimota might just have their name on the WCM machine and little else. It, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean that Bimota's going to be supplying some engine, because what are they going to do? Going to turn around and buy one from Suzuki and pass it on to a WCM? You know, I don't know. But I would say that WCM would be better off finding a company that actually builds engines and then working with them. And then, you know, these companies do exist. You know, what about Rotax? You know, that would be a good place to start, Briggs & Stratton. And in other news, Carlos Checa's deal with Team Tech 3 Yamaha might be in jeopardy over tires. Apparently, Checa wants Michelins, and the Tech 3 team has the deal in place with James Ellison and all of that for Dunlops. And if Checa insists on the Michelins, that might well cause Dunlop to changed their minds about providing these blue light special pricing on tires for the team, and that's probably not something that Tech 3 can afford. Not to mention the fact that there's already that tie-in with Ellison and Dunlop. So even if Tech 3 says no to Dunlop, you know, what's that going to do with Ellison? Is he going to end up losing his rights? So then Tech 3 would be having to choose between Carlos Checa and James Ellison. I think personally, I know where I would choose if I had that choice to make. And so we're just going to have to see if on that, if Checa is willing to ride on the Dunlops, or if he's going to dig his heels in and say, you know, Michelins are nothing, otherwise I'll go be a test rider for somebody, or, you know, or what. So we'll find out. And as soon as I know anything, I'll let you know. Well, last week I passed on a story that Max Biaggi had signed with World Superbike Team Alstari Suzuki Corona Extra to ride alongside Troy Corser and Yukio Kageyama. Well, apparently that wasn't a done deal yet last week, because the World Superbike teams were testing at Phillip Island in Australia this past week, and Alstari Suzuki was noticeably Maxless. Stories are out that Max's demons are still haunting him. Supposedly Suzuki doesn't really want to supply another factory bike to the team, and Honda subsidiary Showa said that they can't supply the suspension bits for Max. Alstari team boss Francis Bata believes that the team can build a bike for Max, probably with Olin suspension, provided that they can purchase some of the other necessary things that they need from Suzuki, which includes a $350,000 ECU, which, wow. But basically, yeah, this goes to show you, you know, in Superbike, you know, it's not exactly the same motorcycle as you go down to the store and buy, but it, you know, it starts off being that way. Now, the factory-built bike ones, you know, that's hand-assembled by some guy that's picking through stacks and stacks of pistons and everything else and finding the ones that are just, you know, flawless. And whereas the one that's on the assembly line, you know, the guy just takes them off there and sticks them in there. So you might have something that's, you know, a tiny bit out of spec and things like that. Whereas, you know, the hand-built one is going to be much, much more hand-built. But you can, you know, you can just go down the store and buy one of these motorcycles, and provided you've got the thousands of dollars to spend on suspension and apparently the ECU, you can have a competitive machine. Okay, Max does deny having signed any contracts with the team, but he said that he'd happily consider a solid proposal. However, Max's week wasn't totally without track time, because he tested a Formula One car for the Midland F1 team at Silverstone in England. Max only did about 10 laps due to the rainy conditions, and he wrote on his website that driving on a completely unknown Formula One circuit with a temperature only about 5 degrees Celsius, which is about 41 or so degrees, and on very wet asphalt, made his adrenaline go up to 1,000, which is Italian for making his butt pucker. He commented that it was a beautiful experience that has made him understand better what it means to drive a Formula One car on a wet track. After the test day was over, Max was quoted as saying, "I took this chance, and if there's another chance for me soon, I will take it. Maybe this year I will race bikes, maybe not. Nothing is decided yet." And of course, this test rekindled the rumors that we sort of had heard once or twice that Max might be switching to Formula One, but Italian newspaper Gazzetta dello Sport reports that it's unlikely that Max will switch to Formula One. And despite the fact that my confidence has been severely shaken in the Italian press by the inaccurate news concerning the Alstari contract, I'd have to say that I agree with that one. You're not going to see Max in Formula One. You might very well see him in World Superbike this year, but he won't be in Formula One. And if he does go to Formula One, Midland's not going to be the team to pick. I mean, you might as well go somewhere where you have a chance to be competitive. If Max goes to World Superbike, he's not exactly going to be getting a real warm welcome from Troy Corser, because at the Phillip Island test, Corser told the Australian press, "I don't care about Max Biaggi or Alex Barros." That was terrible, sorry. These guys coming from MotoGP used to say that superbikes suck, and now they say it's the best thing going around. So if Max arrives, he's not going to come here and run at the front and win, because he's had everything to do that in MotoGP, and he hasn't done it. So, kind of sounds like Corser's been taking soundbite lessons from Carl Fogarty, doesn't it? You better play nice there, because you might very well be on the same team soon. Radio 6, a radio station in Rome, ran a show about the whole Biaggi mess, and at the end of that show, they said that Biaggi was in Belgium on Thursday to discuss the last details with Francis Bata, and that he would then be returning to Italy on Friday to sign the contract with the Flying Flamini Brothers. However, we've heard all that before, so I'm not holding my breath until I see the actual press releases. Actually, until I see Max Piaggi lining up on the grid, I'm going to have to remain skeptical. All right, like I said earlier, Max McAllister and I couldn't get the time to do the phone interview about suspensions, so I'm going to delay part two of that suspension segment that we talked about last week, and we're probably going to have that next week. But for now, let's continue our journey on up the motorcycle and talk a little bit about the frame, the chassis of the motorcycle. You might think a frame does a little more than kind of hold the motorcycle together, you know, sort of a convenient place to hang other bits on. And I suppose to an extent that's kind of true, but the frame's geometry and flexibility, or lack of it, has a huge effect on the handling of the motorcycle, and the materials that make up the frame affect the ratio of sprung to unsprung weight, which also affects the handling adversely or beneficially, depending upon the way. And about unsprung weight, you remember last week I talked a little bit about how it works. Well, MotoGPOD listener Gary Friesen sent me an email clarifying things a bit and adding something that I didn't mention at all. So Gary wrote, "Another explanation of unsprung weight. I once read, and I'm paraphrasing, probably badly, Newton's law says, for every action there is an equal and opposite reaction. So, if the unsprung weight of the front suspension is 100 pounds, when you hit a bump that is 100 pounds of pressure pushing the bike up, naturally, there is the weight of the bike rider pushing back down, so there is a ratio of sprung to unsprung weight. The higher the ratio sprung to unsprung, the better. The key being the weight pushing the suspension up. Just thought I'd share that." Okay, well, thank you very much for that, Gary. I do appreciate it. I'm glad that you shared that with me, because I didn't even think of mentioning about the ratio of one to the other as being very well, very, very important, you know, as we're going to see here. Because I was just thinking, you know, the lighter the better on the unsprung weight. But you're right, it's the ratio, too, that's important. So, what are modern Grand Prix racing motorcycle frames made of? Sugar and spice and everything nice, right? First off, the rules specifically prohibit titanium for the frame, along with the front forks, handlebars, swing arm spindles, and the wheel spindles. And there's also a general rule about the elasticity of metals used in the entire machine. But other than that, as usual, the FIM rules for MotoGP don't really say very much at all about what they can and cannot do. Now, just like regular stock motorcycles that you can go to the motorcycle store and buy, different manufacturers use different methods and metals for frame construction. For instance, Ducati is using a tubular steel trellis-style frame, pretty much similar to their road-going bikes, because Ducati wanted to stay true to their roots, and trellis frames are a Ducati thing, you know, along with desmodromic valves and 90-degree V-twins, even though their MotoGP bike used a V4, because they knew a V-twin would be hideously uncompetitive. But according, you know, so they're staying true to those roots, like I said. Then according to their website, WCM is using a steel tube frame with a steel swing arm, which seems a little weird compared to what the other teams are doing and might explain some of their problems, because it's kind of heavy. Because the other teams are all using aluminum, generally cast, but Team KR actually machined theirs from billet. Now, the teams will want these frames to be stiff, but not too stiff. And stiff in some directions more so than in other directions, and, you know, and in places on the frame. For instance, Yamaha says that with the 2005 M1, they wanted to retain the same vertical and twist rigidity as they had on the 2004 bike, while actually reducing the lateral rigidity. And this increases front end feel at high lean angles, because the advantages of suspension travel when you're at a high lean angle is reduced. You know, suspension works most efficiently when it's moving directly up and down, which in a motorcycle equates to heavy braking or, you know, acceleration in a straight line. But as the bike leans over, the efficiency of the suspension is greatly reduced, because the more you lean, the less suspension travel that you have to work with, and the more that a bump can affect your stability and of course, therefore, your confidence. Now, one thing that all these racing motorcycles have in common is a lot of adjustability. There's so many things the mechanics can do to make slight alterations to the bike's handling to compensate for different tracks, different weather conditions, all sorts of things. And one of the main and most obvious places to make these adjustments is to the steering geometry by adjusting the rake and the trail. Along with wheelbase and swing arm length, rake and trail are what define a motorcycle's handling characteristics and weight and all that sort of thing. But you know, when you're talking geometry. Now, to describe rake and trail and offset without a picture might be a little bit hard, but here I'm going to give it a shot. Picture in your mind the triple tree that actually holds the forks to the frame. You know, the handlebars are fastened to this in one way or another as well. The hole in the frame that the triple tree passes through, that's the steering head, and the angle of that compared to vertical is the rake. It's also known as a caster angle of that motorcycle. Now, this is adjustable on a MotoGP machine and on some street bikes. So you can get different rake angles for different situations, whatever you might need. And then the distance from the center of that steering head to the center of the fork tubes is the offset, because you know how those fork tubes are actually in front of the steering head. That's why you've got the triple tree. It's more or less a triangle, and the point that's facing you as you ride is the steering head. The other two points are the forks. That offset controls, well, the trail, because trail is a measurement from a point on the ground directly below the wheel hub to a point on the ground where a line that's drawn through the steering head parallel to the make measurement would touch the ground. And you can actually offset the steering head as well, so that you have, or you know, it's raked as well, so that the angle of the forks is not exactly parallel to the angle of the steering head. And that's typically done when you want to, you know, really extend the forks and things like that without adversely affecting handling, because then you reduce the trail other ways and this and that and the other. But basically, that's what you're talking about here. You understand rake going through the steering head. Trail is a line that's drawn through the steering head, and the distance from that from a line that's directly behind the wheel. And it's not going to be the same as offset. It's different. Now, typically, the closer to vertical the steering head angle is, meaning, you know, the smaller the rake in degrees, the quicker steering a motorcycle is going to be. But it's really a function of trail that makes the motorcycle quick to steer. It's just that, you know, one fast and easy way to alter the trail is to alter the rake. If the trail is too small, the motorcycle would become unstable, you know, less than a couple inches, and the front wheel is going to be going into a tank slapper, that sort of thing. But if it's too long, the bike has the turning circle of a truck. So, you know, this is very important to get it right. And companies spend a lot of money to determine what's the best rakes and trail settings and all that for a street bike. And on MotoGP bikes, they spend a lot of time testing and everything with this, combined with suspension settings and tire pressures and just all sorts of other things to get just the right combination of settings throughout the entire bike. So it's a very important area to get it right. So that is our tech segment number 3, the frame. A little bit short. I hope it was interesting. Let me know if you have anything to add or whatever. I always like hearing from the listeners, and I'd appreciate any input on it. Maybe tell me if I got something wrong or what I could have done better about the segment. All sorts of things. I do like to hear back from listeners, so definitely email me about it. All right, that's going to be the show for this week. Thank you very much for downloading it. I hope you enjoyed it. If you haven't done so, please do stop by the MotoGPOD website and take that little survey. It should only take you about 5 minutes or so. And thanks very much to all the people that sent emails this past week. Like I say, I always enjoy getting input from listeners. Send me an email at MotoGPOD@MotoGPOD.com. Love to hear from you. If you'd like to submit a segment or an idea for a segment, you know, just let me know. You could write something up or maybe record something and then send me that, and, you know, maybe I can use it. Or send in a question if it's something that I have an answer for. You know, I'll be happy to use it on the show. I've got a couple that I'm working on now for some later shows, kind of trying to work them up into a full-length segment. And then, like I said, next Friday, if all goes as planned, we're going to be continuing our suspension segment from last week's tech portion. We're going to be talking about the telescopic forks with Max McAllister, from Traction Dynamics. So certainly hope that works out. And until then, well, so long. MotoGP is a trademark of Dorner Sports SL. The MotoGPOD podcast and MotoGPOD.com are not affiliated with Dorner Sports SL. All other trademarks are the property of their respective owners. MotoGPOD isn't affiliated with any of them.